The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, and welcome back to our little intro meditation class. And as we begin today, it might be nice to take some questions. If you have any comments or questions about the instructions from last week, or want to report a little bit how it went, or just your, you know, whatever's on your mind that about what we've done so far, before we venture forth to the next step.
My brain is full. I think we had too much last week.
too much teaching?
Too much information. Mm. It was very useful, and I don't know if I came in tired or what. I learned a lot, but, you know, I did not have my best week of focus, let's just say. But it was very useful information. I'm just...
Maybe I'm too enthusiastic.
It was good, but it was a lot.
Okay. Yes.
Hello. I'm Ronald. You know, I think when I paid attention to a sensation, like maybe like an unpleasant sensation, it kind of it started to like go into flux or something. It would kind of change a little bit, maybe get softer or a little less, you know, intense. And then it seemed, it seemed that way. So, anyways.
Great. So, unpleasant sensations. If you've focused on them. If you applied your attention there, you start seeing that they're changing.
Yeah.
And it gets softer or lighter or something. Easier to be with then?
Yeah, kind of. I guess so. It felt nicer than not paying attention to those sensations. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was different.
Great. Yeah, sometimes I've noticed that I can have something very unpleasant going on, pleasant sensations, something inside, like a headache or something. And I can kind of feel miserable about it until I turn my attention on it. It's there. I kind of know it's there. I know it's there really badly. But I'm kind of not really turning towards it and facing it directly. And there's something different happens when you just really take it on. You say, okay, I see you. I acknowledge you. I'm here with you. And show me what you are. You know, and then... Oftentimes, things start changing.
Hi, I'm George. A quick one that has to do with what you said about the two things you need to look at or deal with is, one, your ability to bring your attention to something, and then the skill to maintain the attention. And for me, it's like a no-brainer. Bringing my attention to something is so much easier than maintaining it. And I was wondering if other people had that same view, or maybe there are people who know it's hard for them to bring attention.
Okay, so last week I made the distinction between two aspects of attention, bringing your attention to something, turning your attention to focusing, and then sustaining the attention on that. And George says that it's a lot easier to notice, to do the initial work of just turning towards something, but then to keep the attention there is hard. And he wants to know how many of you are like him. How many of you find it's easy enough to turn your attention, but once you have it there, it drifts off easily or gets distracted. Yeah, so.
There's quite a few people who find it easier to maintain attention than to bring attention to something.
How many of you feel it's easy? It's not so. It's as difficult to turn your attention to something, but once you're there, you'll stay there.
Oh,
you're like
that?
Hard.
Okay.
It's hard. It's easy to stay once you're there.
Yeah, it's hard for me to stay focused once I put my attention to something to stay on.
So that's hard to stay focused, huh? I think that's what most people find.
Yeah.
It's a different muscle in the brain, in a sense. And the muscle that mostly often needs to be developed is the one that keeps it there, holds it present.
I decided to try and practice with my eyes open because I didn't feel like closing them. And I brought my attention to my curtain that was gently waving in the wind. And I just didn't judge it at all, either way. I just brought my attention to it and focused on my breathing. And pretty soon I realized that the curtain was breathing because it was moving with the air, and we were both reacting to the air, and the oxygen was keeping me alive, but the oxygen and air was making it do something too. And so I just hung out with my curtain.
Great. Great. And what was the consequence of doing that?
It felt like I was practicing.
Yeah. And did you feel more peaceful or more present or more?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Great. Almost anything can be the subject of meditation and mindfulness. So when the eyes are open, something going on in the world out there can be. The challenge is, it's often with the eyes are open, we get pulled into the world of thinking about things. And a little bit you did that, because you're thinking about the oxygen that you're sharing with the curtain. It's true that there is a sharing going on there, but to reflect on that connection with the oxygen, which you can't see, is a little bit conceptual. And and sometimes these concepts can help us stay focused, but it's still at the conceptual level. Anybody else? Okay. So let's start then with a sitting today. So put yourself into a stable, upright meditation posture. Giving some attention to the foundation of how you sit, that you're firmly planted on your cushion, the floor, or on your chair. If you're sitting in the chair, see if there's some way that your feet can be both firmly on the floor, so it's a feeling of strong stability there. Feeling some solid support, some solid presence. And then rising up out of that foundation, be aware of your spine. And let your spine be a little bit more upright and alert than it usually is. So sitting up straight. The idea is to have a little bit of strength in your spine, a little alertness or uprightness. And then around that uprightness, to relax whatever muscles in your body that are not needed at this time. So maintaining the uprightness of your spine, letting your shoulders soften and relax. Letting go of whatever tension you can let go of in your shoulders. Or if you can't relax your shoulders, that's fine. Perhaps you can soften around the holding that might be there. And then traveling down the muscles of your back. As you exhale, perhaps you can soften your back muscles. It can be helpful to also soften the belly. Many people, often enough, there are people who hold their bellies in for whatever reason. And perhaps you can let your belly hang forward. Some people find it useful to loosen their belts. And it keeps their stomach loose and also creates a broader base. Lower center of gravity. And then see if you can soften and relax the muscles of your chest, solar plexus. Bring some attention to your muscles of your face. Perhaps you can soften around your eyes. Around your forehead. The muscles of the jaw, let them relax and soften. And then perhaps taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. As you breathe in, let the in-breath be a reminder that you're here, this time and this place. And on the exhale, let go of any thoughts and concerns you have about any place else, anything else. As you exhale, see if you can let go of your thinking. Not forcefully or insistently, but let your thoughts soften, drift away, stop. Even if it's just for an instant. Each time you exhale, let go of your thoughts the best you can. Feel the experience of breathing in as something, as a physical connection with your body. And then as you exhale, let go of your thinking, but let go into your body breathing. As you let go of thoughts, concerns, past and present, not simply letting go of them, but letting go and letting go into, like you would let go, gently let go of the sides of a pool as you go fully into the water. So you let go of your thoughts, as you let yourself into a deeper connection to the body breathing. if your thinking has to do with times and places that are not here and now, remind yourself that here and now is where the lived experience of life occurs. Everything else is a kind of a virtual reality. Then let go of your thoughts and concerns in favor of being here, your lived experience. Let go into your lived experience of breathing. And if your thinking is about something happening here and now, perhaps you can consider how thinking is actually a little bit removed from your experience. And as you let go of your thinking, perhaps you can let go more fully into your experience as it is. Rather than making effort to stay present, stay alert enough that you can let go of anything that takes you away from being present. Let go of anything that keeps you from being aware, being mindful. What do you have to let go of so you can be more fully present? For your breathing, for your primary experience, for what's really happening here and now. And then in the last minute of this sitting, let yourself think a little bit and reflect on what your experience was of letting go. What was easy to let go of? What was hard? So, I like to think of meditation as an art more than a craft. And art is something which we approach creatively, we approach intuitively, and there's a kind of a trial and error approach. And art is something that's always shifting and changing. It's not like a set way that we do it. So there are different factors of mind or processes of mind that come into play when we meditate. And at different times, different ones of them are important. So there's a set of things that we do in meditation that are more active processes, active applications of the mind. And then there's aspects of the mind which are more passive, though I prefer the word receptive than passive. So, for example, what I've been talking about the first 2 weeks is more the active side. The first week we talked about acknowledging. You know, to clearly acknowledge what you're paying attention to, not just notice it there, but really acknowledge it. That is an active functioning of the mind, really ground us in what the experience is. And the last week we talked about, I talked about turning your attention towards something, that initial application of attention, and then keeping the attention there, sustaining the attention there. Both of those things generally, at least the way I presented it last week, is more about, again, you actively do something. There's a whole other side of meditation which is not the doing, but an undoing. Letting go, relaxing, being more receptive. And many people associate meditation with calm and being receptive and, you know, undoing a lot of the ways which are tense and caught up in the world. Sometimes the active side of meditation is important, and sometimes the more calmer sides or the more passive or receptive sides are important. If you find yourself really sleepy or dull or something, the active sides might be helpful. Or if you find yourself kind of hesitant or removed from your experience, not really connecting, maybe it's helpful to really kind of be active and really apply yourself, acknowledge, really connect well with what's there. But if you're already tense and already revved up about things, you don't want meditation to be more doing. And some people are like neurotic doers. And they just tie themselves in a knot when they hear that meditation is doing something more. And what they need to learn is to do less. And meditation is about unlearning all the doing. And so in that sense, people, meditation teachers will often emphasize the importance of being. Just be. Don't do anything in meditation. Just be. And just being, in order to just be, often requires a letting go. So letting go of all the doing. So one of the most common doings people do is think a lot. Think, judge, analyze, figure out, manipulate, engineer, and all this kind of mental activity. And sometimes the thinking has to do with other times and places, and sometimes it has to do with what's happening here. But somehow or other, our involvement with thinking interferes with our ability to really be mindful, to be present. And so without some letting go of our interest and preoccupation with thinking, you can't really meditate. So there has to be some kind of, some letting go, at least of our interest, some stepping away from it. And so we sit down to meditate, and hopefully there's an understanding that you're no longer going to be, you know, thinking about what happened at work. Not intentionally, at least. Your mind might be on automatic pilot thinking about work today, but you're not sitting down here to intentionally try to solve a problem that you have, figure out, you know, what's for breakfast. But those kinds of thoughts you let go of, they might arise, but you let go of them, and so that you can just be here for the meditation. So thinking about breakfast might be easy enough to let go of if those thoughts come up. But thinking about the argument you've had with your good friend just before coming here, or the difficult conversation you're going to have with a colleague at work, or the fact that your house is about to be foreclosed on you, those kinds of a whole bunch of very strong things that have big concerns for us can really grab our attention very, very strongly. So the mind is kind of locked into those. And so it's a lot harder to let go of those. Part of the training in meditation is a training in letting go of those things we can let go of. And the muscle of, there's like almost like a muscle of letting go that we learn to develop that muscle or develop the wisdom that is useful, it's beneficial, it's for us to let go. So part of this is training to let go. So when something, like someone's about to foreclose your house, it might take a lot of wisdom, a lot of understanding, a lot of effort to let go of those kinds of thoughts and concerns to really be here in the meditation. Part of what might support your letting go is you realizing that if you can really let go of those concerns and get calm, then after meditation, maybe you can think about it more clearly and in a more useful way. But if you keep kind of being wrapped up in those kinds of concerns, you can't really see very clearly. Mind is kind of cloudy. It's not easy to let go, but it's certainly part of the process. Letting go, also the idea that we're letting go into something is useful. If it's just a matter of letting something go, it can seem like deprivation. you're depriving yourself of your wonderful fantasies or wonderful concerns. Or I knew one person who spent a long time in meditation. I don't think he was living in a monastery, Buddhist monastery. And he was ordained as a monk. So you think he'd be into it. He spent most of his time meditating, working out puzzles. I don't know what kind of puzzles they were, but you know, some kind of complicated puzzles that he had read about, and he was like, you know, Sudoku, I don't know what it was, just working out, you know. And he kept himself busy in meditation. So eventually he disrobed and went back, and you know, it didn't last that long in the monastic life. So to let go, now when we let go into something. And to realize we let go into something, that's useful to let go into that. We're letting go into the present moment if we're thinking about the past or the future. We're letting go into our direct experience if we're thinking about our experience. It's possible to think about our experience a lot and not really experience it. It's possible to, sometimes I've thought about my experience only to realize that I was thinking about something else. I wasn't really thinking about my experience. I've had conversations with people where I'm thinking about the conversation, thinking about my wonderful rejoinder, wonderful thing I'm going to say, and preparing my little argument and my speech. And after a while, I was realizing, what are they saying? What did they just say the last 5 minutes? So I'm there, but I'm not really there for the experience of the conversation because I'm caught up in my thoughts. There's many situations in life where, for example, you can possible to think about, you know, you're possible to have a meal and not even feel it and taste it because you're thinking about talking to something else. But it's also possible to have the meal and think about the meal, and the thinking might actually keep you a little bit removed from really savoring the tastes and the flavors of your tongue. So when we let go of our thinking, hopefully we have some sense we're letting go into something that's useful to be present for. Now, if the experience of the present moment is unpleasant, as the gentleman there said earlier, then, you know, why would you want to let go into feeling greater displeasure? What we're trying to do in this meditation practice is to have a very honest relationship to our life, to really connect to our life as it actually is. If we're only free when things are pleasant, we're not really free. So part of letting go into unpleasantness is letting go into what's really here so that we can find our way to be free in the midst of it, a wise relationship to it, or to see it more deeply for what it is. And as this man said, his experience was that when he looked carefully at his unpleasant experience, it started breaking up a little bit and shifting and changing and was lighter. There's a wisdom of letting go. Now, there's an interesting thing that if I tell all of you, instruct all of you, please now, this is the instruction, don't pay attention. Just don't notice anything. Stop it. Come on, stop. Just stop paying attention. You know, with that kind of instructions, it's, you know, you're kind of stuck, right, in paying attention. It's kind of like, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, like suddenly you're probably more alert than you were during much of the meditation. there's a way, what I'm trying to convey here is that there's a way in which being aware is a natural functioning of the mind. And a relaxed mind will naturally be aware. And so as we let go of tension, preoccupation, and all that, it isn't so much that we have to try to be aware, is that awareness is just there for us. So part of what we do when we let go, we're not just letting go of preoccupation, we're also letting go into awareness. So this idea that we're letting go into something useful is, for some people, is very, very helpful. The letting go part of meditation is part of what makes, for many people, relaxing and softening, because we're letting go of preoccupation, things we're locked into, caught up in, and all that. So it's very useful to learn to let go. And when we can't let go of something, Then when we do in mindfulness, we don't worry about that. It's okay not to let go of it if we can't. But then we turn towards it and use it as the subject of mindfulness. So the very thing that makes it difficult to be present for, if you can't let go of it, that becomes your meditation. So if you are thinking a lot about what you can have for breakfast tomorrow morning, and you can't stop having those thoughts, then what we do in mindfulness practice is we turn towards the thinking of breakfast and really look at that as a present moment experience. And make that, so we're not in conflict with it or struggling against it, we just, you know, become mindful of that and find ourselves hopefully free of those thoughts, not by having them go away, but by no longer being kind of entangled in them. So there's letting go. So any thoughts about that? Anything you want to like to ask or say about this? Or anything you want to say about your meditation you had where we focus so much on letting go?
Okay, well, you said that if you're having trouble with concentration because of preoccupation, which is what I had because I spent the day reading a book, and then when I was sitting here quietly, of course, my mind started processing the writer and what he was talking about, and I made some really good comparisons about my life and his, and so that was useful to me, actually. But it wasn't meditating. I guess it was more important for me to figure out certain things. But I was thinking, like one of the things you said to do is, well, you focus on the preoccupation. So then you start saying, well, okay, noting, thinking about the book, thinking about the thinking. That's what you're supposed to do, right? But I was also thinking that if you get grabbed in your words, which is definitely my experience is certain conditions and certain types of ways that people relate that I'm quite interested in studying right now grab my attention. But I was thinking that also there's also the technique where you can like, okay, if you're stuck with that, you can start focusing on like the awareness of, okay, I'm aware that my feet are sitting on the cushion, my feet are resting on the cushion, I feel my bottom on the chair and feels kind of hard. And that would also, I just thought of that now, I mean, I've known about that technique, but it's like, I didn't want to do it. I was like, this book was grabbing me, and I was like, preoccupied with that. But I suppose that next time that happens, when I really, you have to make a decision. Do you want to meditate or don't you want to meditate?
That's right.
You know, maybe I was like not really committed to meditating. Maybe I was only half committed to meditating.
Great, yes.
So first I have to make a decision. Do you want to meditate or don't you want to meditate? And then if you want to and you're committed to that and you get grabbed by one of my favorite preoccupations these days, then maybe start focusing on the bodily sensations in the present moment. And maybe, I don't know if that'll work or not, or whether we'll get into a wrestling match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it all depends. So sometimes that can be a useful technique, is to redirect the attention, and then the energy of the attention is not going into preoccupation, and it tends to, over time, it kind of can diminish. And so many people find that happens just by focusing on the breath, coming back and doing that with the breath. Sometimes it's useful to do something like, you know, like you're talking about different parts of the body or the body touching a chair or something. But this issue of a couple of things that you brought up that are important to talk about. One is that it's unreasonable to expect that when you sit down to meditate that you're not going to think. There are some times when thinking falls away or discursive thinking falls away, and it can be usually very pleasant. But a teacher was once asked, what do you experience when you meditate? And her answer was, all the things which are unresolved in your life. Things that are unresolved kind of linger or there, and they kind of bubble up. Now, some unresolved things are beautiful. You have the beautiful memories that come back, sometimes difficult memories that come, or if you spent a whole day reading a book, that, you know, it's still being processed, you said, and so it's there. So there's a lot of things that might, and when you meditate, you relax, kind of you're relaxing the surface concerns of the mind, surface preoccupations of the mind. It allows the deeper concerns, deeper unresolved stuff to kind of bubble up. And sometimes meditation allows unresolved issues from 20, 30, 40 years ago to surface. And it's kind of surprised people that these things come back. I thought I was finished with that, and then they come back. So so it's very important that when you meditate, it's okay to have thoughts bubble up. You shouldn't be at war with your thinking and feel like it's bad. It's part of actually the cleansing process of working through the unresolved stuff. But when you meditate, what you don't want to do is to get involved in those thoughts and memories and concerns. It's like you allow it to bubble up and be there, and then the quicker you can let go of it, you're clearing the field for the next thing to bubble up that needs to bubble up. But if you get involved in those thoughts, then you're feeding that preoccupation. You're kind of involved in it, and it kind of keeps it going. And you're interfering with a deeper process that can occur. So, for example, say that I sit meditating, and I get angry. I remember something happened 10 years ago, and I remember still angry with that guy. And so one option is to think, well, he was no good, lousy jerk, and you know, and if I ever get a chance to meet with him, I'm going to give him peace of my mind, and can you believe what he did to me, and I'm going to, you know. And I get myself wrapped up in those kinds of thoughts. Another option is to notice, oh, there's some anger, some angry thoughts about this guy. They bubbled up. I guess it's still there somehow inside of me. Okay, thank you. And let go. The next moment, a similar thought about this person bubbles up. I let go. The next moment, a similar thought bubbles up. I let go. The next moment, a deep sadness connected to this person wells up. And the sadness is actually deeper and more primary to the whole thing. And then I let go of it. More sadness arises. I let go of it. The next moment, perhaps, what bubbles up is my deep affection for that person. Oh, there's affection there. Maybe that's part of it all. And so the different elements of what happened there, and deeper elements of this experience of this person, have the chance to bubble up. If I had, the first time the anger bubbled up, if I'd gotten involved with the anger, I would have interrupted or interfered with that deeper process of new things and deeper aspects of this coming up. So the letting go, any kind of thoughts can arise when you meditate, the quicker you can, and the important work, is, I think it's sometimes useful to think, oh, they needed to arise, but now my job is to let go. To clear the field, something new can happen. And maybe that new thing is it's almost the same experience over again, but never the same. And so it's kind of like this cleansing process that goes on. Is this making some sense? Is this making sense to you? So an analogy I like to use in meditation is of a washing machine. You put dirty clothes in your washing machine, and the washing machine agitates, the water goes in and agitates the clothes, and the water gets dirty. And no one complains about the water being dirty. It's great, that's what's supposed to happen. And then the drain cycle comes on, and it drains out, and more water comes in, and happens a few times until the water is clean and all that. So meditation is kind of like a washing machine. And awareness or consciousness is like the water. So we sit down to meditate and something moves inside of us. And something comes out in the wash. Something comes out, and meditation means it comes to awareness. Now when the water gets dirty, no one complains. But when something bubbles up in awareness, many people will complain, they'll get involved. But the important work is that it's been dislodged and been released. And once it's in the awareness, it's on its way out. It's best just to let go. So in thinking about this book, of course you'll have, after reading a whole day of a book, you probably have this momentum of thoughts come up. It's okay to let it come up, but as soon as you notice it, let go. And maybe they need to come up a few times because it's a pretty impactful book, but just let go, trusting that the first time something arises, whatever work needed to be done was done. You don't have to get involved anymore. You don't think about it and engage anymore. You're actually, and when you're meditating, you're actually better off clearing the air again to see what next thing will arise. Also, you're letting go, and you're not reinforcing it. And then at some point, nothing more needs to arise, and then you can come back and just stay with your breath. Be with your breath. Is this making sense? Who doesn't understand what I'm saying? Make some sense? So what I'm emphasizing this importance of letting go, at the same time as not being at odds with yourself for what you have to let go of. Nothing's wrong or bad that bubbles up or occurs. And meditation is infinitely accepting in a sense permissive of your inner life happening as it is. But the trick is you don't want to get involved. Pick it up and think about it and analyze it and reject it and judge it. You say, oh, there it is. And if you're preoccupied by it, let go of the preoccupation, let go of it, and let go back into being here. And if you can, come back to the breath. Yes? The mic somewhere?
That makes a lot of sense. The thought that comes to my mind is I can see things coming up and letting them go for something else to come up. The thought that comes up, though, is that I may realize something that I want to remember.
Oh, the great American novel.
And therefore, letting it go seems scary. You know, it's like, but I want that one. And maybe it won't come back, and then I'll have lost some insight.
Yes. Yeah, maybe so. So there are some people who will have a pad of paper next to them when they meditate, so they can write down these things, so they know they're saved, and then they can go back and meditate, and not think about it anymore. I don't know what percentage, but a great majority of the people who write down their great insight, later when they read it, what was I thinking? so the mind is not necessarily its best judge of these, and. But it's kind of like this. This is another analogy. Say you want to take an elevator up to the 20th floor of a building. So elevators are pretty neat. They're a pretty neat phenomenon. There's a box. You go into this box with no windows usually, and it suddenly goes up and takes you up into the air and opens its doors into a new floor and a whole new world. It's pretty neat. So it's a neat process. So you go into your elevator, you push the 20th floor, but your elevator mate pushes the second floor. And the second floor opens, and it's a pretty interesting floor. The decor is amazingly attractive. So you get off to explore. And then you remember, oh, I'm 20th floor. So you get back on eventually, but it takes a couple of years. And then, the person pushes the button and you end up on the third floor, and that's just a mess. They've had a war there, and it's been a horrible war, and just like you're so horrified that you get off the elevator and go around being horrified and angry at everybody fighting. How could they do this? And then you go back in the elevator a few years later and take another, go one floor more, and the next floor is just like... there's blank canvases everywhere, and you have the inner artist suddenly is just bubbling up, and you say, "Oh, I know exactly what that blank canvas calls for—the greatest painting since Mona Lisa." And I'm gonna, this is just—I have this great, beautiful, warm, loving feeling inside about expressing myself, and it'll be so great. And then you spend a few years doing that until you remember, the 20th floor. You can get back on the elevator. So the process of going up the elevator is a beautiful process. But it's easy to get sidetracked along the way. And when we get sidetracked by all these wonderful floors, we've interrupted the process that will take us up to this beautiful place on the 20th floor. So it's not a very good analogy, but it kind of points to the idea. So the idea being that as we meditate, as we get calmer, more centered, for example, often creative juices begin flowing. And as those creative juices flow, we tend to get off on a creative floor. And there's a lot of people who meditate who end up like doing the great American novel or this and that, I was on a 3-month retreat once. A long time to be in silent retreat, just not talking to anyone, silent retreat, engaged. And I spent 3 whole days of those 3 months designing helicopters. I know nothing about aerodynamics or helicopters or engineering. I have no business designing helicopters. But I got off on the helicopter floor. And I had all this creativity and wonderful ideas, and it felt so wonderful and pleasant to have those thoughts. And I also was, at that time, halfway into the retreat, I was very concentrated with my meditation. So the concentration just zeroed in on these thoughts, and I couldn't stop for 3 days. So I say all this because sometimes it's helpful to realize that the process that got you to become creative and have insights, that process will take you further if you don't get off on that floor. So if you think, oh, that was a great thought, I have to remember that and think about it some more, you've gotten off on the floor. And you've stopped the wonderful process that got you that far, and that wonderful process will take you even further. So trust the process, not the results. Yes?
I've been forcing my mind to think of different words in a softer way than the original thought that was there. It just goes on all day long. And I'm getting into a different frame of thinking, period.
Great.
So, and Ty writes in his book that his mother was trying to teach his sister to be more feminine. So she was teaching her. And he says he didn't know it, but at that time, she was teaching her daughter to be mindful. Does that make sense? I mean, that's what he says.
I don't know if it makes sense. It's a little odd to me, but it requires some mindfulness to change the way we think. And it's useful if our thinking is not a useful way of thinking. If we're always being negative about things and always critical and angry and all that, sometimes it's useful to start reframing how we think about things. And for example, if we're always angry with someone, start having generous thoughts to them, or grateful thoughts. Think about how you're grateful for them, and it's a retraining that happens. It requires some mindfulness, but in and of itself, it's not pure mindfulness practice.
What do you think of that thing that Ty wrote, whereas he saw his sister being trained to be a feminine person according to Vietnam standards, and then years later he says she was actually being trained in mindfulness? I was really surprised that he said that.
I don't know. It seems like an odd statement, but perhaps being feminine means to be really yourself. And whenever anybody becomes really themselves, maybe they're, I don't know. Yes, please.
So I sat down to meditate this morning, and this is, I think, kind of a related topic to this discussion of thinking and meditation. And I wonder if what I did was meditation or it was something else. Was it mindfulness or was it analytical thinking? But it was very useful to me in any case. So I sat down and meditate, and I was concentrating on my breath. And then I noticed that I was anxious, and I started to try and investigate my anxiety. I realized that there was a thought process going on. It was worrying about not having enough time to do something. That was at the base of the anxiety. I felt it. And then I turned and challenged my assumption that I wouldn't have enough time to do something. And then the anxiety tremendously lifted.
Great, beautiful.
Is this mindfulness or is this?
Well, up to the point where you challenged those thoughts, where you kind of, it was mindfulness. The challenge where you kind of reframed it or questioned it and kind of analyzed it a little bit and kind of, that's not mindfulness, but it was a wise thing to do. So we don't have to be purists when we do mindfulness. There are other faculties of the mind activities of the mind that are helpful. And so if it's helpful for you to become more present, sometimes it's useful to do that kind of work. Some people will start analyzing like that and just get lost in the analytical world, and that's not helpful. But if it's helpful, by all means. realize it's not at that moment. It's not mindfulness. It's more of a contemplative practice, contemplating something, and that can be quite useful. Okay, so so letting go is an important part of practice, and there are times when that's really important thing, and sometimes it's not really the forefront of what needs to happen. Sometimes applying ourselves and being kind of firm and determined in practice is important. And sometimes that's the last thing you want to do. You just want to let go and not be determined, just become soft and relaxed. And what we need to let go of will change over time. It might be when you first sit down to practice, you need to apply your practice, you need to be determined in order to overcome the scattered mind. But at some point, as we get calmer, more settled and centered, at some point we have to let go of that, the very determination that helped us to get calm in the first place. And then we let go of that. But if we let go of it too soon, then we stay scattered. So that as meditation changes, we find that more and more things are useful to let go of. As meditation gets really deep for people, we let go of more and more things. And we let go. One of the things that's difficult for some people to let go of at a certain point is being in control, being the one who's manipulating, controlling things. Sometimes it's difficult to let go of our self-concepts. We have this idea that I'm a certain kind of person, and you know, I'm here. Or just even the very idea that I'm here, I exist. At some point, we have to let go of that. And that's very frightening for some people, because if they don't have the thought I exist, then maybe I don't exist. But of course you do. But it's very frightening to let go. So part of the as meditation unfolds and deepens, there's new and new things to explore, to let go of. And hopefully, over time, you'll see that it's your own, generally in meditation itself, there's a way of letting go that helps you become more alive, more present, more connected, more peaceful, more free. And letting go makes you more free, because what we're letting go of primarily is our attachments to things, our preoccupations with things. Buddhism is more about letting go of the clinging to things than it is about letting go of things. So I can cling to my money, for example, and think, oh, money is bad, I need to let go of my money, I'll give it all away. Some people find that useful to do. But in Buddhism, what we're focusing on is we're letting go of the clinging to the money. It doesn't require us to let go of the money. You may or may not. Once you're not clinging to it, you might want to share it with people and not hold on to it so much. But it's the clinging that's the issue. And so as long as we cling, we're not free. So a very important part of this Buddhist training is a training to learn to recognize how we hold on and then learn to let go. And the training to let go of a thought when you meditate is a very important, it might seem very simple, a simple thought, what am I going to have for breakfast? I don't think about that now, I'll come back. It might seem simple, but that's part of the step-by-step training to learn how to let go, eventually learn to let go of things which are really hard to let go of. So when your house gets foreclosed, maybe it's useful to let go of your preoccupation to that. Maybe you realize you have to let go of your clinging to your house because you have no other choice. then you've learned how to do that so that the whole situation is healthier for you. There are plenty of people who have unfortunate things happen to them, and there's so much more suffering around that unfortunate thing because they stay holding on, they're clinging to something or other. So this movement of letting go is a really important one in Buddhism, in this meditation practice. So that's a little bit more the more receptive side, the letting go side of practice. I want to one more thing I want to say, if it's not going to be too much today. is a little bit on the active side that kind of goes parallel with this idea of letting go. Sophia mentioned about, making the decision or the commitment, when I'm going to meditate, I'm really here to meditate. There has to be an intention. Oh, this is what I'm doing now, I'm going to meditate. I've had many situations where I've sat down to meditate because I was supposed to, it was in the schedule, and I didn't really get behind the meditation. I wasn't like, okay, I'm meditating now. I'm just like, oh, I'll get around to it eventually, and start thinking about different things and whatever. And then they ring the bell, and oh, I guess that wasn't meditation. I was lost someplace. There wasn't really the intention to meditate wasn't there. And other times I've sat down to meditate and it's been really clear, okay, here I am, Gil, and you're here to meditate, you're here to be present. And the intention has been there right from the beginning. And so there's a kind of greater sense of being grounded or connected or involved. And even though the mind might wander away a lot, the intention carries me, okay, come back, be here. And having an intention is really important. So part of the instructions in mindfulness, basic instructions in mindfulness is to pay attention to whatever is compelling. Anything in our human experience can be a subject of mindfulness. So we talk about the breath, our body, our feelings, emotions, our thoughts, quality of the mind. There's many things we pay attention to. You know, our sounds, the sights, smells, whatever's going on, whatever's compelling, is a subject of mindfulness. One of the areas that include, when we include everything, that's one of the important areas is the area of our intentions, the motivations that we have. Your motivations and intentions for behind what you do, what you hope to do, is one of the primary shapers of your well-being or your lack of well-being, of your health or your lack of mental health or spiritual health. That your intentionality has a huge impact on our life. So if what you intend is to cause harm to someone, that is a very different consequence than if you intend to cause them benefit. If you intend to cause harm, you'd be more contracted, more tight, maybe angry, maybe a little bit mean-spirited. And so that intention then begins shaping a variety of things about you. If you intend to benefit someone, that shapes you in a different way. If you intend to be peaceful, that shapes a different mind, heart, being for yourself than if you intend to be angry a lot. If you intend to be miserly, that creates a different result than if you intend to be generous. So your intention has a big impact. The impact of intentions are immediate. The quality of your intention can affect how you feel now. If my intention is to give someone a piece of my mind because I'm angry with them, if I pay attention to how I feel when I'm angry that way and want to get them, I feel uncomfortable. So there's the consequence here and now. It also sets up a momentum of tension. And so just like reading that book, you couldn't just put the book down at the end. The book was still with you. You're processing it. So whatever we are setting ourselves to do that's kind of powerful will linger in our consciousness for a while. So if I'm really being kind of mean-spirited to someone, you know, go around for 10 minutes being really mean, I can't just kind of snap my fingers and stop. There's momentum in there. And not only momentum in the mind, but also momentum in the body in terms of tension connected to it. Also, it sets up a habit. So the more mean I am, the more likely I'm going to be mean later on. This is a teaching in Buddhism of what's called in Buddhism karma. And so karma has to do with the quality of the intention that you have when you do something has a result. What you sow is what you reap. Having an intention doesn't happen in a vacuum. It isn't like you have an intention, it's done with, but it actually shapes you, it's a habit, it conditions your body and mind in various ways. So one of the things we pay attention to in mindfulness practice is our intentions. What's the intention you have for what you're going to do? And this takes many shapes. One form is to start paying attention to noticing what the bigger aspirations you have for your life. What do you want your life to be about? What's your real motivation or intention for your life? This is such an important issue that I actually advise people. I'm into people meditating, right? Otherwise I wouldn't teach this class. I think it's good to meditate every day. I think it's actually more useful every day to spend time reflecting on what your deepest intention is. What is your deepest aspiration and wish for your life, for this life of yours? It's so precious to be alive. There's many people who don't think about it. Many people who live not really their deepest heart's wish. Don't even know what it is. They receive ideas from society around them what they should do and be successful or whatever. And they lose touch with those, with maybe their deep aspiration. But to every day have a practice of reminding yourself of your deepest intention, then you have a better chance of living from there. And so I actually think that's more useful than meditating every day. And that's saying a lot, since I think meditation is really good. And so I think it's really helpful to spend some time, you know, and that's more a contemplative time. You go for a walk someplace or have tea or something and really, and do it over days or weeks or months to kind of really see. And sometimes it takes being brave to have, you know, to really being able to admit or see, what is your deepest wish? If you could do anything you want, what would you really do? If there was no limitation, no fear, what would be coming out of you? So there's that level. And then there's a level of intention of when you meditate, the intention to, I'm going to meditate. That's what I'm doing here. And I'm going to stand behind this intention. It's important to have some strength when I do something, to have some strength to follow through. And then you sit down to meditate, and then you have this great American novel comes up and says, well, you know, meditation is okay, but it's, you know, I realize it's important, but the great American novel, that's like, you know, the great American tragedy. You know, I have to think about this and work it out. But then you're not following through. There's no strength of follow through. And part of a healthy life, I think, is when you set yourself a course to do something that you have the ability to follow through, to stick to it. And so being able to have an intention and stay with it, I think, is a sign of maturity. So when you sit down to meditate, one of the things we're training ourselves to do is to have that ability to stay with it. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm sitting down to meditate, to be with my breath. This is my intention. Of course, you're going to wander off and this way and that way. But over time, you keep coming back and reset the intention. That ability to follow through becomes stronger and stronger. So that's an important aspect of intention. And then it's very useful to look at what is the intention behind what we're about to do. What motivates us to do what we do? So in Buddhist ethical analysis, we decide, you know, how can we decide what to do? One of the primary criteria is what's the intention behind what you want to do. So, for example, I might want to go out and buy a new shirt. That's the desire. What's the intention? What's the underlying rationale or motivation for buying a new shirt? It could be that all my shirts are hot and it's getting warm here in California for the summer, and I think I'll manage to get through my day much more better if I have a lighter shirt. Or it could be the intention to get a new shirt is so I can come here and teach next Wednesday evening and show you what a good dresser I am, so that you'll think much better about me. So you'll think, he's pretty classy. And, you know, this, I'm really glad, you know, he must be a very lofty meditation teacher, and because he has this beautiful white shirt, and, you know, probably it's kind of saintly, especially if I get a white shirt, you know, it's kind of like, he must be a really pure guy. I want you to see how pure I am. And what? So those are two different intentions. The same action, the same kind of activity, the same kind of desire to have a new shirt. One is to make myself more comfortable in a hopefully useful way, and the other is to build up my status in your eyes. Thank you. Which one is healthy? So if I just feel, oh, I want a new shirt, and don't question the underlying intention, then that underlying intention will still going to operate and impact me. So when you ask, should I buy a new shirt or not? The spiritual analysis would be, oh, what's the intention behind it? And really look honestly and say, oh, it's, you know, to help me live a better life, you know, or to be helpful to someone else, or because it's healthy for me, or because I want to be the coolest meditation teacher on the block. And so everyone, whatever. And so if I see that underlying intention, then I can make a course correction. Then I can say, oh, wait a minute. Maybe there's something useful here to let go of. If the intention is to look good for you, so you think of how better of me in some kind of neurotic way, it's really good to let go of that. And so this training of letting go is really helpful there. If getting a new shirt is to make myself more comfortable so that I can get through the day without being exhausted, I don't have to let go of that intention. That seems like a healthy one. If we notice our intention after we've acted, that's like closing the barnyard doors after the horses have left. You know, it doesn't do much good after they've left. So in Buddhism, we put an emphasis on noticing what the intention is before you do something. One of the great places to do that is when in speaking. Why do you say what you're going to say? What's really the motivation? And generally, I think it's kind of humbling to find out what really motivates much of what people say. And most people don't question it, the deeper intention, deeper thing we're trying to do, trying to impress someone or something. So part of the field of mindfulness is to notice intentionality. A very interesting world opens up, inner world opens up, as we start noticing the intentions behind what we do. And, it can be simple as the intention to get seconds when you eat. What's the intention? You want seconds, and if you think you're supposed just to act on your desires, then you don't question or don't look more deeply. But in mindfulness, we look more deeply. What's the intention for wanting seconds? What's the, whatever we're doing? There can be a range of things. It can be so simple as you're walking down the street and you notice that you're suddenly walking on the left side of the sidewalk. Why that? If you'd be more mindful, you would have noticed the intention to walk on the left side of the sidewalk was because there was this scary person walking down, and you didn't want to somehow have to confront that scary person, so you moved over. So if it was fear-driven, perhaps, I don't know what, or maybe it's a beautiful person on the left side of the sidewalk. I think if I walk on the left side of the sidewalk, she'll notice me. And so there's a kind of a desire operating there. I'm just making up these examples, but the idea there being it can be very subtle, the intentionality. And intentionality, to look at what our intentions, opens up a dramatic window into what makes us tick. And as we look at what makes us tick, then it's possible to learn to let go of that which is not helpful and learn to maintain, keep that which is helpful, to let go. So again, just letting go is a foundation that's really helpful. As we let go in meditation deeper and deeper, it's also a way of getting down to the really deep places of intentionality, of aspiration, of wishes, the heart's deepest wish in ourselves. And sometimes I like to think that the heart's deepest wish is often a very shy place. It doesn't want to reveal itself that easily. And so you need a lot of quiet and peace to really listen to the deep voices within. So one place to train around intentions, starting to get a sense of that impulse to act before you act, the thought to desire, is in meditation itself. And the way to do that is when you sit down to meditate, sit down with the idea of being still, not moving. And then notice the first time there's an notice when there's an impulse to move. And then don't move, but rather look at what is the intention behind the moving. So for example, I could sit and my knee starts aching. So it's innocent, it seems simple enough, will move, so they don't hurt so much. So before moving, the instruction would be, look at the intention that's there. Don't just act on the desire to move, look at the intention. So the intention might be, oh, that pain does not feel good. It's possible I'll injure myself, I don't want to take the risk, so a good way of taking care of myself is changing my posture. That's reasonable. The intention might also be, you know, that's not a dangerous ache. I just hate pain. And I have this aversion to pain. And not only that, but having pain is a proof that I'm not a good meditator and doesn't fit my idea of spiritual realms about dissolving in white light. And so I'm just going to move so that I can, because I hate that pain, and I'm going to try to get more comfortable so I can have the white light experience of meditation and become a better, you know, and get it, maybe Gil will give me a badge, you know, a medal, the most white light, you know, Wednesday evening. So the first intention of avoiding harm, of hurting yourself, is a useful one to act on. But the second one of acting on hate or acting on, you know, trying to get some beautiful, blissful spiritual experience so you can get a medal is not useful. Maybe a more useful intention would be, I'm uncomfortable right now, and I think I need to learn how to be comfortable with discomfort. So I think I'll hang in there. I'm not going to hurt myself. I paid enough attention to not, it doesn't seem, I don't get the signals that I'm going to hurt myself. So now I think it's more useful to stay there with it rather than giving in. So, or say you find the mind beginning to wander off in meditation. The mind begins to move. Oh, what's the intention behind that? Oh, I'm starting to do crossword puzzles in my mind because I'm bored and my intention is to get away from my boredom rather than be really present for boredom. So the instruction for you is when you sit, sit still. You have a certain commitment to being still when you meditate. Don't move your hands, your legs, or anything intentionally. But when you find the desire arises to move, look at the underlying intention for that movement, the quality of that intention. Is it you're restless? Are you aversive? Are you being compassionate? What is it that, what goes on there? And start looking at the intentions that kind of bubble up when you're meditating. As you become aware of that world of intentionality, the deeper intentions that are there, it'll give you greater access to letting go and to being free. If you're not aware of the deeper underlying intentions for your desires, those intentions will be pushing you around, acting on you, giving you kind of pressure to act. But if you're aware of them, then there's a greater possibility of letting go. So it's as interesting or useful, can be useful in meditation to do this, because maybe you discover there's more layers of letting go you can do. And as you let go, perhaps you can learn to be more peaceful and more settled in your meditation as well. Does that make some sense? You want to ask some questions? About that, we have 5 minutes. Yes. And then we're straight back with the mic, please.
So one of the things that happened to me when I first started meditating was that I would burst into tears all the time.
Yes.
And it stopped happening after a while, and then I stopped meditating so much, and now it's happening again.
Great.
Now, when that happens, I watch it. I know it's coming.
Yes.
And sometimes I just make it stop by like, oh, I'm really sad.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, I'm sad. Here comes the sadness. If I don't cry, it'll go away, and then I just let it go away.
Uh-huh.
And other times I just go, oh, hell, and I start bawling.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, but I don't know what the right, I don't know if I should even be asking the right thing to do is. But.
Yeah, there are different causes for crying in meditation. There's a range of causes, reasons why people cry. But a general policy, default policy around it, is that If the crying is a form of release, take it as a good sign. It's something's being released. And so And so sit there and just let it release. And meditation, like, you're welcome to cry here at IMC. And if people around you hear you crying a little bit, it just opens their hearts, is the hope. And it's hopefully a safe place to let that release happen. If you're bawling and the floor is shaking, then you can go in the conference room and continue there. It's okay, but just then it's kind of nice to go somewhere else. If it's release, it's actually important to let it happen. But what happens with crying sometimes and the sadness is sometimes people get involved in the sadness. And sometimes there's self-pity and identification with it, and it kind of, oh, poor me, oh, you know. And then we're getting involved, and it gets much worse on its own because of our involvement. It's one thing to feel sad and let the tears come and be able to sit upright and balanced. And you should try to stay upright and balanced. Because when you collapse, you're giving into it. So you don't want to give into it, but you don't want to stop it. And so sit upright, be still, and let it come. And try not to get entangled or involved or come to conclusions with it or believe it or act on it or, you know, just sad. I'm a sad Buddha right now. So one more. Now we're 9 o'clock, so one more if you think I can have a quick answer. And then I have a handout for you today. So if those of you who want to sneak out now, wait.
You gave that example of the washing machine. So in the washing machine, you're releasing things that are dirty.
Yes.
And you keep getting more water, and finally there's no more dirt that comes out.
Right.
But I have a feeling that that doesn't happen with the mind, unless maybe you have that experience that thoughts don't happen to you anymore because they've all washed away. It seems like it's... it's the process of just having things arise and paying attention to it, not so much that you're hoping that it will go away.
Right, that's right. That's right. I mean, a mindfulness practice is not about wishing anything to be different. It's about how we're present for something. So we just let it be, really be present, but be present without getting further entangled or involved with it. What I was referring to is that sometimes there are deep, unresolved issues inside of us that really need to come up. And then I was trying to say, it's useful, I did an analogy to try to make the point that once it arises, it's okay to let go of it, because actually then it makes room for the next wash cycle. So don't get involved. Don't think about it. Don't be for or against it. Just let go and, you know, let it drain away. It's done its work, just coming into awareness. You can't stop thinking forever. Sometimes in meditation you can stop for a while. And there's other thoughts that bubble up that aren't necessarily unresolved issues. It's just, who knows why some thoughts appear and disappear. But I was referring more to the unresolved, deeper issues in that analogy. Things that are stuck inside of us. Is that okay? So... I hope that you can experiment with letting go and find a delight in it. And I hope that you can spend a little bit of time this week exploring the world of your intentions by questioning more deeply. What's the intention behind what you want? So don't just settle for what you want, but what's really the intention behind it? What are you trying to accomplish? What's the quality of the mind? So there's a little bit, handout here that has some instructions for around this thing that I talked about today. So those of you who would like to take this home and practice with this during the week can take this. And maybe, could you pass it out? Maybe Sophia's, okay. Maybe pass it out or maybe put some by the chair in the outer hall. And so thank you. And I'll stay up here a little bit if some of you have questions. And then next week we'll have our last meeting. Thank you.